Aloha from Hawaii, this is Jeff from the Board State, bringing you yet another episode without broken microphones. Little inside joke from last week's episode. In this episode, we're going to cover topics such as ADHD and game development, using public spaces for gaming, Nina Freeman, oi oi oi, the punk poet designer, gamifying exercise, how to choose a gaming engine or a game development engine, something I hear almost daily, and much, much more. This episode, we're going to go a little bit over our normal 30-minute time. We went off on some tangents, which is really the beauty of doing things like this, right, is those side conversations. That happened. Joseph Campbell always talks about these side paths, right, on the hero's journey, and we go on a few of those. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, or you'd like to send us some poetry, you can send it to theboardstate@gmail.com. Again, that's theboardstate@gmail.com. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Board State. I am Mr. V, aka Jeffrey Vieira. I am joined with my companion on the beautiful coast of Nanakuli, or beautiful Waianae coast in Nanakuli. You are, sir?
Jacobs.
And also a little tired, it sounds like.
nah, Jacobs.
Yeah. So yes, the Board State is a podcast about game design. Whoa, what's happening over there? Sound like you're like assaulting something, John. Everything okay?
Oh yeah, my dog just wanted to get out of my room.
Okay, cool. No worries. So yeah, we're a podcast about board game design or game design in general. I teach a game design class out in Anakuli, and I'm fortunate to have Jack as my student. What we've been doing of late is we've been covering some of the gaming news highlights of the week, and that's what we're going to be doing in this episode. So our first article is going to be, my teen wants to be, wait, is that right? No. That's not it. Back up. Whoops. That's not the one. Okay. I was reading some Diablo 3 builds before starting the podcast. Okay. My teen wants to be a video game designer. Is this realistic? This is an article by attitudemag.com. I put this in here specifically because so this is kind of a Q&A format in this article, and it's a mother or more importantly parent asking advice from the internet or from the site specifically regarding their child wanting to be a game designer. And they got a response, or the post is by Ryan Wexelblatt, who runs ADHDdude.com, and he has a short video, and he responded to it because the child, in fact, has ADHD. And I thought this was amazing. I just hope this post goes viral. Your thoughts on this before I jump into it, Jack?
Well, I mean, but the pairing, as it looks right now, seems to be more concerned about how the gaming industry tends to react to game developers or force their hand. And it's honestly like that in any industry. So I could see where she's or he the parent is coming from.
Okay. Some of the responses that I really liked was that from Ryan was the number one, like just to quote directly from the site, the number one thing you're going to have to do is make your brain flexible. This means your brain coach, that voice in your head that helps you get through things that are becoming difficult and boring. And then the whole collaborative part, especially in game design where you're working with completely different disciplines within a studio, having to not dominate with and you know, I know a few people with ADHD, but I can't even imagine what it's like to go through. One of my friends told me it's like flipping through channels, so you're getting like bits and pieces of you know each story in their mind. And these you have no control over your thoughts or directions. So I thought this was a really cool article to share. I wanted to also promote the ADHD dude .com's page, and he has a Facebook group. And I think he may actually be from Hawaii. So like his logo is like, you know, a shock that's, you know,
yeah.
And then I watched that video where he's giving advice specifically about game design with ADHD. And it looks like the background kind of looks like Hawaii. So I was like,
Yeah. And, you know, if you listen a bit closely, there is some pigeon here and there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So for our audience that doesn't know what pigeon is, could you do
it? Pigeon is also called... there's another term to be using it, but okay. It's a combination of basically Filipino, Portuguese, Japanese, and Hawaiian, and Polynesian, and English. So basically, pidgin is this combination of languages. So if you like live in France, near Germany, then you'll have a pidgin where it's partially German with French. But for us, it's mostly about all of the Pacific. So you could even find Chinese or Vietnamese in pidgin.
Mm-hmm. And for our case, it's not because we're geographically, you know, close as well, but because a lot of the migrants we had, right?
Right.
The day that, you know, needed to communicate and created like a median language where they could communicate with each other, because we're such a melting pot of different cultures here in Hawaii.
So, quick, like, history lesson.
Yeah, go for it. I got my feet up on the table, Jack.
Yeah.
You go right
okay,
ahead, man.
So basically, unlike America and the European powers, well, they had a requirement to learn their language. For the most part, Hawaii did not have the requirement. This caused a lot of the immigrants from Japan, from Asia, to... during the several of these wars and European wars when they were taking their lands to come to Hawaii before the monarchy overthrew and all of that nice stuff. But because of that, pidgin got started during that whole migration period and escape from the European powers and America.
Cool. Thank you for that. All right.
Yeah.
Back on topic.
Yeah.
But that was really, really cool. I didn't know that as well. Thank you very much. And I'm sure others will appreciate that as well. Next article is going to be from... Okay. Next article is going to be from newshamlethub.com. This is Board Game Design Club and Kent Library. And this is not really, you know, a long, thorough article. I put this in here because I wanted to bring up a conversation of with you, Jack, about this emergence of libraries and communities using board games more and more now as a kind of a meetup medium. your thoughts on this. So this is Kent Library, which is, where is Kent Library?
Britain.
What?
Britain, I'm assuming.
I should probably know what this is. Where it's at. Let's see, directions. I'm at the website. So your thoughts on this. New York. This is in New York.
Okay.
Kent, well, very New York. Very close to Britain.
But I honestly think that with more stuff like this coming up, mm-hmm. I really think that it's gonna inspire a new wave of game development and a new take on game development. Wow. Because without our industry constantly evolving, then we are basically gonna de-evolve to the movie and TV industry, and I don't like that thought. But what keeps us evolving is stuff like this, and how it's not just gonna be, at first it's gonna be ball gaming, but now it opens the direction to, okay, do you wanna code, or do you wanna go into esports, or do you wanna just play ball games?
Oh, that, well said. Much like how indie games in the video game industry is really pushing innovation into interesting directions.
Yeah,
These spaces and having a lower barrier of entry for design and that type of exposure in communities, like you're saying, is going to lead to some interesting, innovative directions.
Yeah, and, you know, it's also going to be, I mean, look at Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Mm-hmm. They have already put in two indie developers' main characters into their game.
Oh, I did not know that. Wow.
So, already the gaming industry, well, on the video game standpoint, is now adjusting and understanding that, okay, indie games are the future and they're leading the charge. Mm-hmm. Reason why Microsoft have this whole Game Pass. Mm-hmm. Their idea is to try and get Steam games onto the consoles. So that's going to be interesting. All of these ideas with libraries and also with indie games, it's going to change the industry.
Definitely.
But, yeah.
But I love your reference to de-evolving back into the state of films. that was a good analogy.
Well, in digital media, only now digital media is now copying game development. Mm-hmm. In the way of the industry is now trying to diverge out of Hollywood, like how game development diverged from AAAs into indie development.
Right. I have another word for that as well. Punk rock. DIY, you know, make your own way. Punk rock. But yeah, okay. So that is Board Game Design Club at Kent Library. It's just an announcement on what they're doing. It's every Saturdays at 11. if you're around the area. I would definitely check it out. And we are actually going to be doing something very similar on the West Coast very soon.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, yeah. So that's going to be Carmel's Hamlet Hub. Carmel's Hamlet Hub. It's a little tongue twister. Okay, next one. Next article. So this, speaking of punk. Nina Friedman, so this is by Willamette Week. This is when Nina Friedman has been called the punk poet of gaming, but that doesn't mean she doesn't like to shoot things. So this is just a little bio, a little Q&A article about Nina Friedman and some of the things that she's done. She's a 29-year-old designer, video game designer that's done some very, very notable titles through the years. Your thoughts, sir?
I honestly didn't know about this until I read the article, and Hobao is pretty well, like, you could tell she lets on, she prefers to show and not tell on certain points, but for the most part, her bio is what you could see and what you could argue, say, inspires the next coming generation. But
yeah, one of the things, so in my notes, one of the things that stood out to me, just to quote what she was saying, is one of my focuses as a game designer is player character embodiment. I really like to create games that enable the feeling of being an actor, almost. Like learning your role as you play the game. In that way, games are uniquely positioned to help people see and understand other perspectives. And that's one of the most beautiful things about role-playing games, is shedding off your skin and stepping into a completely different personality for 3-4 hours or sometimes 12 hours, right? And beginning to wear that person's shoes. And I think that's a very good vehicle for empathy and understanding, you know, someone from a different culture or the reasoning behind why people do certain things, is to kind of like embody their skin for a while. And it also helps that, in a gaming format. Yeah. Anything you want to add to that, sir?
Well, just adding to that one sentence, it also lets her, basically her future bosses or whatever it may be, know that, but I could do other games than, just a horror game or just a board game. Because she said actors are not really strategy games like how some other game developers usually do.
Yep. I think her latest game, I don't remember what it's called, but she made a game about like her, if I remember this correctly, like her and her, like a relationship with her and her boyfriend, but just like, it's just a simulation kind of game. And she was probably working through some stuff herself. I'm just guessing, but use that medium to create, you know, a game around these emotions that she was having.
Yeah.
All right. And so that's, oh no, go ahead, please.
No. I was just saying, from her bio, it sounded like she would put reality into her games then. Fiction.
Yep, and she is living in the holy city of Portland, Oregon. All right, so that's from the Willamette Week. That was, again, Nina Freeman has been called the punk poet of gaming. Yes, sir. What's that?
Do you want to explain why you just call Portland, Oregon, the holy city?
We're gonna skip all that. We're gonna go right to the second. I don't want to go into a Portland rant. Okay, next one's going to be from bicycling.com. This is how Swift is turning indoor training skeptics into believers. It's a virtual game platform that... What? So funny.
Oh, nothing.
So Swift is like... They have... So Peloton is another one of these that are like really, really popular. And what it is you have like a... exercise bike, like an indoor exercise bike that is somehow connected to a virtual world, right? And it's gamified through like achievements or, you know, achievements with variable rewards based on the number of miles and times that you bike. And I don't have any of these, but I did some research on the Peloton at one time. I was really considering getting that. It was super expensive, though. But I also believe that a lot of, beyond just having it in your home, I think that a lot of exercise places also gamify and use this methodology for health. So you're like much like Mario Kart, you're like racing against each other's, and there's like a leaderboard that'll show you, you know, like who's number one and whatnot. And actually, I think I saw there was like a commercial skit where like all these people on exercise bikes, they're like racing each other. And then these indoor exercise bikes. And then there's their coach is like putting down the last person, like, you know, in that race, like walking around, like, you're number nine, you know, why are you number nine? You know, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your
thoughts on this entire integration of using exercise equipment and gamification.
The reason why I laugh is because I could just imagine like this actually being a real competitor to not just Peloton, but also some of the biking stuff that hotels use.
Yeah, actually, yeah. That's a cool one.
Mm-hmm. And how they made it too. It looks like something you have like Mario Go Kart or Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. So it's more like not just a adult could use it, but anyone could use it. But the main reason why I laughed was just the comments.
Oh, you can always count on comments.
Yeah. I can't see myself paying for a smart trainer then that now costs almost as much as my bike did. It looks fun, but can't shrink it.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. I love it. I mean, I used to ride bike a lot. And I mean, that of course going outside is really cool. But like to me, it's all about lowering the barrier of entry to do a thing, right?
Hey.
And then using gamification, which is, you know, using game-like elements in non-game environments to achieve, you know, goals, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great, perfect marriage. But yeah, it's, you know, like the commenter kind of noted, it's nice to go outside too.
but also, though, it's like if you scroll down to the last picture, I mean, the potential of like esports now going into this will be actually interesting because, you know, on the one hand, they're just biking, but on the other hand, like, you could have teams of it and they're racing each other, like in Mario Kart, but this time it's both physical and.
That's a really good point, man. I didn't even think about that.
I mean,
you have like streamers like, today I'm training for the.
yeah.
that's so cool, man. I didn't think about that.
This will actually help esports become more and more aligned with football. If you're in Europe, that's football run by FIFA. If you're in America, that's football run by the NFL.
I don't know what football is, but yeah. No, I'm kidding. Right. So that was any other comments on this article?
The last one is
okay. How
they started it, about how they return to this like trope of like all of these indoor biking companies. I started with a parent who wanted to lose weight. Mm-hmm. But then it changes from this trope I'm just stated, like, but here's what we're making a difference from our competitors. Like, very, very quick. You may not even catch it unless you could ID the trope. Yeah.
Okay. So that is how Zwift with a Z is turning indoor training skeptics into believers. On bicycle.com. All right.
Yep.
Next article is going to be from Game Industry Biz. Oh, yeah. Okay. We're gonna stand this one for a little bit. What is the best gaming engine? And then, you know, colon is game maker, right, for you. This is something I hear over and over.
And over again.
What art the greatest gaming engine dust? you go ahead first, because I'm gonna take some airspace.
Oh God. Okay.
Well, so let me just frame it first. So this is an article by Marie D'Alessandri, and she's outlining that very question. And this is, well, directly, she's giving you an in-depth guide to GameMaker, which is a very popular gaming engine, which, you know, really doesn't require too much coding to use to create a video game. A lot of the assets and stuff are there for you. They've been around for a very long time. And yes, so that's what this is. It's just highlighting GameMaker and, you know, answering the question, or trying to answer the question, what is the greatest, or what is the best game engine for you, Jack?
Okay. And honestly, I see it as like a console. Like how you choose a console, and or the comparison between consoles and Androids and computer gaming. Okay. A lot of people ask, like, oh, I only have enough to go into one, which one should I do? And I want to say the same answer applies from console, computer, and Android gaming to this. Mm-hmm. Whatever works for you. It doesn't have to be the best solution, but it could also be the worst solution. Mm-hmm. So whatever you decide is the best will be the best solution for you. Mm-hmm. Same with game account, with game engines. And this article shows the game maker and how much game developers could make off of it, but there was a lot more other sources, materials, just for this one, for game engines in general. And you could also make your own, but it will cost time. So, what are you willing to give? But yeah.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So there is definitely a preference in, you know, what you're trying to build, what you're trying to accomplish, will lead you to different types of gaming engines. If you're trying to get into the industry and learn some programming and familiarity with different engines, with specific engines, then that may lead you down. So, you know, like Unity and Unreal is really the most, in my opinion, the most popular gaming engines that are used in the gaming industry. They can be, well, I think Unreal now is free. And then there's like a publishing license that I think you have to pay now if your game makes X number. Yes, so that's one path, but really, the goal is just to. I mean, I would just say, and what I tell everybody is, what are you trying to accomplish? Like, if you're just trying to make a game, you know, and not really learn skill sets, skills like, you know, coding or 3D modeling integration, you know, all the kind of skeleton stuff and all that, then you might want to go for something like GameMaker, right? Just, you know, kind of drag and drop. You know, it's a very simple logic to build your game. But there's so many other stuff. Like, we're using Twine now in our class, which is a choose your own adventure engine builder, engine game builder. And it works fine. And it's, you know, it's free, you know. You guys really understand how the tools work.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, so we use Twine for that specific type of game that we're creating, and it's free. The other thing that I would mention is find an engine that's heavily supported, you know, that has a good site, you know, has good documentation, maybe some YouTube videos on it. So well, that you can, so once you get started, you can reference material or ask questions if you get stuck on something. You're going to say something, Jack?
Well, for the most part, all engines will have some sort of material. The only thing about the material is that sometimes it's going to take even longer process. So that also may affect your decision on which engine to choose from. If it's like a newer engine, then there is a potential for high potential, but also a lot more bugs and a lot less support initially.
Yeah, so that's what I was alluding to, updated documentation and current support. You know, if the engine that you're using is a Windows 7 only engine, you know, or
yeah,
you know, or doesn't support the new Mac OS update, you might not want to go down that path. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Most gaming engines out there will have a supported community and current documentation.
And if it does only allow you for like Windows 7 as the example, the game engine only allows you to work on Windows 7, that does not decrease the value of the said game. Like, we still play, well, at least I do, and a strong communities play games from 2002 and 2001 just because of nostalgia, and also the game mechanics are good. So if you could make a good game, the engine is just like a beauty mechanic.
Okay. That is from gameindustry.biz. What is the best game engine for you is that game maker. Okay, we're going to have fun with this next one.
Oh, yeah.
From the Times of Israel. And this is regarding the Secret Hitler board game. And is Secret Hitler board game removed from 3 Montreal toy stores? And you put this one up, actually, right?
Yeah.
You added this. So I will give you the microphone and have you talk about this article and why you selected it.
So I was going to the web, and on several history forums I'm on, there was this, someone would pop up this from the Times of Israel, this article talking about this game called Secret Hitler. Man, I love history. I did not know any game existed about Hitler. But it's mainly talking about how these Canadian stores feel like this game is offending people and not giving the people rights. But the game developer is an Israeli, and not Israeli, a Jew. So it's kind of like, where do this line of representation is, and where does this line of, okay, funny comedic humor, because the game is designed to show audience the insanity of Hitler and basically have fun but also understand from it. And before we move on to the discussion phase, another key note on this is that same guy made what the article said, politically incorrect game Cards Against Humanity. So I'm not too sure how you feel about that, Mr. V.
Yeah, I'm a fan of both of those games. If you can tell, okay. In my tone. Okay. So this brings up several different thoughts for me. One is the notion of censorship, right? I don't know, in high school, if you guys got to explore Thomas Hobbes' Leviathan and the notion of like sovereignty and commonwealth. But I don't want to go too deep. It's going to become this Thomas. I love Thomas Hobbes, but it's going to become this Thomas Hobbes lecture. But there's this notion of sovereignty and the commonwealth, right? And the power given to the sovereign permits him to do whatever he deems necessary to protect the commonwealth, right? So that's, you know, if they deem that the public, you know, a la the Great Wall of China or the Great Firewall of China should not be, you know, should not see these for the common, you know, this content or data, but the commonwealth, the sovereign blocks it, right?
Right.
And then on the other end, you have, you know, like Plato's view, where it's like, you know, you would say under 18 or, you know, for the youth to have their, or I think he refers to it in the Republic as like selecting works. So when in instruction, you present instruction to your students in a way that guides them morally, right? So like in these successive steps. So you don't start with this, like the really explicit stuff. You kind of like gradually move them up to there. That's kind of these two means of censorship. But censorship really is, you know, suppression of speech, public communication, other forms of information on the basis that the material is considered objectionable, harmful, sensitive to people, right? So yeah, it's I mean, really for me and this, it's how it's offending the commonwealth, right? If no one's complaining about it, well, and also it depends on the framework of like this game as well. And I think we talked about this in a previous cast, but I won't go too far into it. But games can explore controversial topics, right? I mean, you can kind of explore, you can like step into this landscape and kind of explore it and really get what it's like. So I'm right in the middle with this, where I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, I see if people are going into these stores and fainting, but you know, like in mass or offended, then yeah, maybe, you know, the store owner, you know, should take it down. But at the same side, could also be a topic to explore. But Secret Hitler, and I played the game, is super tongue-in-cheek, right?
Right.
And, you know, and I think there's a difference between, you know, having a game that promotes like a national front, you know, some, you know, fascist national front, and having I think really they're probably more offended by just the name, right?
Yeah.
They're just seeing the word Hitler, so, like, oh my gosh.
And that's the thing where I feel like this what the Three Montreal Toy Stores did was, if it's because of just a name, then I could get it, but it's also petty a lot. Because, yeah, I mean, most of the mechanics are simple and kids could play it even though they shouldn't, but it's mostly simple enough and it's tongue-in-cheek and the art style don't really suggest anything. It just allows people to understand how Hitler got to power. Mm-hmm. But it's also kind of like weird, because I'm not too sure if they even contacted the dev. Article.
Yeah, I looked through the article. I didn't see anything like that. They're just calling out. But I think it's, you know, it's what news to me isn't just about you know, like it's not just about the Secret Hitler game, but like on a macro level, you know, like we're talking about, right? Really, it's about sense, like how to use censorship to control hate, right? Or to allow free speech, right? It's that fine line.
I really hope we don't see too much instances like this. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of it in 2019, mm-hmm. where companies were siding with censorship, and 2019 wasn't a good deal for the gaming industry.
in that respect, you mean, for that?
Yeah.
I mean, there were some amazing games that were released in 2019, but you're saying in that light, right?
And a lot of the games that were, a lot of the controversies that came out in 2019 all had to do with censorship in some way or some form. Okay. So like Battlefield 5, that's political censorship and historical censorship. That was that controversy. Okay. Hong Kong, that was physical censorship.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that was the timesofisrael.com regarding the Secret Hitler board game being removed from 3 Montreal stores. So at this part of the podcast, we would go into some notable games of the week, which we tried to do last week, but I hit the table with my hand and killed my mic. Well, not killed it permanently, but disabled my mic.
It went AWOL. So from my end, I could only hear wah-pah, pah! And I'm like, oh God, that's something that broke.
Yeah. So anyway, but for this week, man, there is so much games that are on Kickstarter that have been released this week. Like I've been just getting like daily notifications that Kickstarters are like shipping to me as well. But it's just been so overwhelming. Was there anything that stood out this week to you? I know Restoration Games, you know, everyone's talking about the Dark Tower. So, I mean, rather than, you know, me putting in a list of games, I just wanted to ask you straight up if there's anything that really stood out for you that was released this week, Jack.
So
there's so much, man. Just like,
there
is. Yeah.
So there is this game called on Steam right now out that actually I loved about the mechanics and also how the story was introduced. It has to do with light. The whole premise of the game is that you're running from the darkness. The darkness is lava, basically. Okay. And you're trying to get out of this space.
You don't remember the name?
It starts with light. Light something?
We can't talk about a game that doesn't have the name. Real quick, I saw this meme, like this library meme, where they put on a shelf all these red books, and then there's a sign above it that says, you know, these are, you know, or what was it? Well, it was something along the lines of, you know, do you remember you guys had a book here with a red cover? Do you know what book I'm looking for a book with a red cover. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like it's like one of the
common I know.
So it's the same thing. It's like, yeah, there's this game with, well, I mean, how many light games, I guess, there are. you don't remember what it's called?
It was on here. It was on the
show notes. It was on our notes? It's not there anymore?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, we got hacked. No. Seriously?
Yes.
I did not take it off.
Oh, wait. But here, Lake Mile.
Okay. What's it called?
Light Mile.
Light Mile?
matter.
Light matter. Yeah. Okay, got it. Okay. So what do you like about this game?
So if you watch the trailer and how it's basically shown off, basically the whole story and mechanics feel within each other.
Oh, this is very cool.
And whoa. So it gives the player a true feel. Yep. Without providing a monster. So the main gotcha. Monster is always going to be the darkness and how you're surviving to it. So
very cool.
That is one game that I really hope gets a lot of support.
Okay, very cool. Here's one that I just got one that stood out. For me, again, you know, amongst the massive amount of games that are being released and all these Kickstarters are just overwhelming me this week. I must have backed like 10 Kickstarters in one last week alone. Oh, she doesn't listen to the cast. She doesn't know.
Okay.
Yes, it's her account. I don't have a Kickstarter account. It's her account. Because that was supposed to be a control mechanism. To help me regulate the amount of Kickstarters that I back, but that doesn't work. Okay, so this is a game called Cosmic Frog. Do you have a link for this?
Yes, I have.
Okay. DeviousWeasel.com. I love this company, Devious Weasel. One of my definitely in my top 20 games is Zimbi Mojo. This co-op about playing cannibals racing to the top of like this tribal cannibal tribe. It's just fantastic where you're trying to become the cannibal king, and then like I think if I'm remembering correctly, it's been a couple of years since I played Zimbi Mojo, but you actually have to not you the player, but your representation in the game is moving around with this crown, and the crown metaphorically has a lot of responsibilities to it. So it slows and impedes your movement. Anyway, fantastic game, fantastic company, Cosmic Frog. So let me just read you the first, the introduction paragraph of this amazing game. I'm so looking forward. This is games right up my alley. So Cosmic Frog. World Eaters from Dimension Zero, Cosmic Frog is a game of collection combat and theft on a planetary scale. Each player controls a 2-mile tall, immortal, invulnerable frog-like creature that exists solely to gather terrain from the shards of Aeth, the fragments of a long-ago shadowed world. It's like, wow, what? It's like, it's like, who can compete with that, Yeah, so just from the description, I mean, the art style is just super cool, man. I'm really looking forward to it. This is the one that, I saw, I got really excited about, and looking forward to it. That's by, the guys at Devious Weasel and Jim Faley. Your thoughts on Cosmic Frog, sir?
I knew you was gonna pick a game like this, honey. But
it's my jam, man. It's my jam.
I know you for quite a while. Yeah, this is your jam. But oh my god, I love the artwork. Like the second art piece they have looks both weird yet super awesome. Like
yeah.
I do not know who the artist is, but I think we may need to add another artist, so switch it up. Nah. All artists will actually top this, but this artist is pretty dope.
Yeah, I was looking at their BDG entry. We've got Tim Barton, and then the designer Jim Felly, Tanny Petit, and Naomi Robinson for the artist credits. So I don't know if it's one person or all of them.
Wait, Tim Barton? The team Tim Barton?
I guess. I love his his bio. American illustrator, space art specialist. Very cool. But anyway, yeah, man, I don't know. This is the type of games I get really excited about when people are willing, you know, to go into these brave spaces of design, right? Whether or not people catch on to it, more power to them.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yep. So that's going to do it for another week. Go ahead. Sorry. No. You had something to mention?
We've got two things that happened this week also.
Okay. That you want to mention?
Yeah.
Okay. Far away.
The first thing is the amount of releases being pushed back and or delayed.
Okay.
So coming from game developers, we understand that delays happen, but like, how do you feel that, for example, CD Projekt Red?
That's a cool company, but I mean, that's business as usual.
Right.
You know, delays are delays, you know. I have more of an opinion on the whole crunch culture of the video game design, especially in like AAA studios. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really upset about it, or it's just the way it is, man. I know people were very upset about the multiplayer coming later, but like, yeah, we kind of already imagined that multiplayer was coming later. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's the industry, man. I mean, that's, you know, if you're going to lose your mind over delays, you know, you should read books instead. I don't know. For lack of a better adage, I mean, that's par for the course.
Yeah. And I think the second thing was basically the reaction towards it, like how you were saying that some people was, you could almost tell that they wanted to send death threats. And I don't think that response is quite needed, especially if it's like a delay of like, oh, we need to polish it. Things happen. We need, game developers are not perfect human beings.
Yeah. So I don't know. So is that gonna do it?
Well,
any other thoughts, sir?
That's it.
All right. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you. We went a little longer today, but I hope that you guys appreciate the internal commentary we had back and forth. We went off tangent as usual. I think that's the beauty with doing something like this, is the unplanned paths that will emerge during conversation. You can send us poetry, comments, suggestions to theboardstate@gmail.com. That is spelled out, theboardstate@gmail.com.